All right, guys, welcome to the Butter Dish. I'm Heidi Ballard.
And I'm Natalie Delaney. And who are we hanging out with today?
Kurt Rollins. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me on. Stoked to talk about you.
Awesome. All right. So for those of you who do not know Kurt, tell us a little about yourself and who you are in our fitness and health space.
Yes.
Okay. So obviously my name is Kurt Rollins. I have been in the health and fitness space since 2005, started out as a personal trainer in a small studio. And my gosh, what is it, 18 years I've been doing this now? So I started my own business. I trained for a few years in that studio, started my own semi-private training business in 2009 in Chicago, Illinois. Did that up until actually October of last year, and then closed the in-person business. And now I am 100% online. In terms of who I train mostly women, nothing against men. I do have male clients, but I just found when I started training, I got probably 80 to 90% of my clients were women. So I just started training a lot of women, and I found that I worked really well with women. So I just wanted to continue to work with them. And I think it's still prevalent now, but not as much as it was back then. You know, a lot of women have fears of getting bulky if they're, you know, strength training and lifting heavy. And for me to help women sort of overcome those fears and show them, you know, if you lift heavy, you're just not going to get big. You know, it's just not going to happen. What will happen is you're going to feel stronger. You're going to look your best. You know, my belief has always been strength training in terms of physique change is the best thing that you can do for your body. Nothing against any form, other forms of exercise. So that was really fun. I found that women were better listeners than men when I was training them. So, you know, I think maybe it was sort of an ego thing. The advice that I was giving them, they were just ready to soak it up and listen. And so, you know, at this point I've trained over 1300 women, and I'm super excited because now that I'm 100% online, the advantage of doing online is I can train women anywhere. So I've had women in, over 10 countries. I won't even go over the countries I've had women in my program from. But the online has also been awesome. As a parent, I have two young boys. I can now spend more time with them at home. So it's certainly the business aspect that I've enjoyed, but also just the family aspect, being able to, you know, take them to school and pick them up, which I really wasn't able to do when I was, you know, at the gym all the time. So that's sort of me in a nutshell in terms of the health and fitness space over the last 15 years.
And how did you get into this space? And also like, kind of like, what's your background and history with like exercise and food and things like that?
Sure. So the way I got into like health and fitness in general, I grew up in a family that prioritized it, which was awesome. I know not everybody does. So I saw my dad, some of my best memories of my dad, he would take me to the YMCA when he was working out. And I would watch him, and I was, for some reason, like so fascinated by the fact that you could, you know, get stronger, and all you had to do was go to the gym and do these exercises. So he kind of showed me some stuff when I was really young. He didn't know it at the time, but that had a profound impact on me. And so I started working out in high school when I was going to play football. That kind of got me into it. I was a really scrawny kid, you know, really skinny. And so I didn't have a lot of confidence. And what I found was when I started weight training, well, number one, obviously like I got stronger, I gained muscle, but I also had like way more confidence. So I saw all these psychological benefits to it, you know, and that just also had a profound impact on me as I got older. And I got into college, and I was going to actually go into teaching. So I was going to get my degree in physical education, decided to go away from that. And I was like, what am I going to do? Like, I don't want to teach. And I was like, oh, I love lifting. Maybe I can be a personal trainer. And so that led me to personal training. And again, you know, I started in 2005 doing the personal training, and it just kind of led me to where I'm at now, where I have my own online coaching business. And, you know, I obviously am focusing on women, strength training, fat loss, all those good things.
I love it. Like, we're listening to you and we're nodding because like we both have our sons are both in football in high school. And it is really amazing, like, to see how they prioritize strength training now. And especially, of course, every boy wants to get big and jacked, yeah. right? Especially in a sport of football as well. But I think there's been something actually absolutely really cool. And for any woman listening to this who has children at home, especially teenage boys up and coming, they really think you're super cool if you're a woman or a mom who can lift some heavy stuff. I will say that it definitely gives you some street cred, especially even that they can even ask you about it, mm-hmm. right? Like, you know, Baz the other day came home. He's like, just well, you know that I deadlift like 245 today. And I was like, oh, really? I just did that for reps. Yeah. And I had a video for it. And he's like, why you gotta like rip me out? I'm like, but what's fun about it is it's just like, it has nothing to do with like how we look or anything like that. It's just purely like, we can do this. I think it's a great equalizer from a gender standpoint as well, too. And I think that, you know, when your kids kind of grow up, kind of like what you said about like how profound it was for you to see your dad. I think that we're lucky to be in a position that as, you know, women right now and as fathers right now, too, that we can actually really influence the way that our children see fitness and strength versus it being like, you know, we grew up in Dexatrim diet pills mm-hmm. and, you know, Jenny Craig, Weight Watchers,
Atkins,
you know, all these things. I mean, I'm assuming you're probably in our age range. Like, are you hanging in the
42.
40s? 42. Okay. Yeah. So same age range. And so I think fitness was so different then. Like, I remember, what was his name with the curly hair?
Richard Simmons,
right? Yeah. And Claudia Schiffer had her own, uh-huh. like, you know, weight training. And you had like, they stood on little pillars and like mm-hmm. different degrees of like
intensity.
100%. Yep. I, you know, I came from that era too. And you know, like I said, weight training with women didn't really start to get pretty popular. I would say till, you know, maybe 15, 20 years ago. It was mostly cardio, step classes, kickboxing, you know, just try to be smaller. And try to lose weight, like you said, dieting. And it's just been awesome to see the transition. And now it's a lot more common and more popular for women to understand the benefits of strength training. You know, you don't have to be a bodybuilder to do it. There's still definitely women who are afraid. I see it because I talk to women who are like, you know, oh no, I shouldn't be lifting too heavy. I'm going to get big. But it's much less common now. And to the point you talked about the profound impact, you know, it had on me. With my dad exercising now, my kids are 7 and 8, so they're a little bit younger. But I work out at home, and so my boys will see me work out and ask if they can join in. And I just think back to when I was a kid, like cool. Like my son, who's 8, is now interested. Obviously, he doesn't need to be like strength training now; he just needs to be like moving and exercising. But the fact that he's interested in it and wants to know more, that's awesome to me. And hopefully, that leads to a life where he's prioritizing exercise in some ways.
Well, and I think like even the ages that they're at, it's so impactful. I mean, I have a 7-year-old turning 8-year-old boy. And yeah, the other day he came home and was like, I think I'm kind of fat because there are some skinny kids at school. And I was like, oh my gosh, we're like first graders and like you're 7. Like, and so it's like, it does start at a very young age, their awareness of their bodies and their awareness of their shapes. And yeah, we definitely have, it's not enough to just dismiss it and be like, no, you're not. It's like, well, let's talk about this, right? Like, what are you seeing? What are you thinking? And it's interesting to show them a parent who's interested in getting strong, even at a young age, yep. they still see it, right? They're still aware of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, totally.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Sorry. Go ahead.
Go. No, you can go ahead. I was just.
Sorry, Kurt. I was just going to piggyback on that comment of just like, it is interesting, you know, obviously working with so many women and our own evolution, we're a lot more familiar with, the messaging about women's bodies and the ways that women struggle with their body image and things like that. But it is interesting to be raising boys and sort of hear this other part of the conversation, because, you know, quote, boys don't have feelings like girls, close quote, right? But in reality, I mean, they're just like, they're, you don't get out of, there's no getting out of some body issues either way. Like with women, you're either, if you're too skinny, you're not curvy. If you're too curvy, you're not skinny enough. And same thing with boys. Like if you're too scrawny, you're not, you know, or if you're too overweight, you know, they have their own set, I guess is my point, but it's interesting.
100%. It's not talked about often enough. Men do have a lot of the same, you know, you call it what you want. You could call it body dysmorphia where, you know, even as a fitness professional, I think we feel like we have to meet some sort of standard in the way we look. I've fortunately gotten away from that a little bit, you know. I know what feels best to me in terms of where my body fat levels are, strength, how often I'm working out, and what allows me to also live a sustainable lifestyle where I'm a good dad, I'm a good husband, and all those things are important. But some of the standards, especially on Instagram, I would say more so than other platforms of, you know, the way that people are looking. You might see somebody who's ripped, cut, jacked, for you guys, more toned, however you want to describe it, and just be like, oh my gosh, like, how I would never look like that, no matter how I trained. And you don't realize, you know, that person has God-given amazing genetics, or there's some photoshopping going on there. We don't really know. I just started following an account, and I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head, but he goes through and he shows you how these people are photoshopping their pictures. And it just, you know, a lot of that is unattainable for most people. So guys have it too, for sure. Probably not as much as women. But just realizing that, you know, you just need to be the best version of you. And that's not just your physique. That's your, you know, your whole lifestyle. But like I just mentioned, you know, does it fit in your lifestyle? You know, are you still able to do the things you want in life? Because if you have to train 6 days a week for an hour and a half, but you have, you know, a wife and two kids, that might not be the best schedule for you, even if you're ripped, you know?
100%. So I think that actually lends itself into the topics that we kind of want to cover today is talking about realistic physique goals, and then also how training changes like as you age. Let's dive into like realistic physique goals. I think, you know, I'm fully guilty of this too. I think there's a point where you reach, especially in your, you know, fitness, that you're like, I'm willing to put the work in. I really know how to, like, you know, gain my nutrition. I have time carved out for these kind of goals. So I'm really, really ready for like this kind of transformation or this kind of work. Right. And It's like, I think sometimes we can get especially disillusioned, especially on Instagram, where it's like 8 weeks, 12 weeks, this challenge, like, you know, abs in 40 days or whatever. Yeah,
dancer's legs in 30 days.
Yeah, and all these different kind of, and you see them, right? You see people who take pictures before, pictures after, and you're like, so we have this belief that like, oh, this is really possible. This is possible for this person, kind of not reading into the things that you said. I mean, there was an influencer that always had someone hold up a picture, you know, beforehand, right? Like the start of like this, you know, cut program type thing. And then like the after, right? Or like sometimes people hold a newspaper up to prove the date and things like that. But like, you know, you see these transformations, you're like, oh gosh, like, wow, they accomplished that in 4 to 6 weeks, not realizing that like, well, yeah, one picture she's like slumped over and hunched over, like
poor lighting.
Yeah, poor lighting, totally different bra, totally different bottom. And then the next one is like black leggings, high waisted. I mean, first of all, can we talk about the miracle of black leggings? I mean, I hope you have an equivalent of that, Kurt, for yourself, but like high waisted black leggings, like are really like, I mean, talk about Photoshop, instant Photoshop, everything just looks like, but like people don't really read into that. All they see is like, I don't look like that in 6 weeks from this sustainable method that like, you know, people talk about that we really want people to like, you know, to do, to employ, right?
Yeah. It's so tough because sustainable doesn't sell.
And sustainable is not sexy, which is such a bummer.
It's not sexy. It doesn't sell. And you know, we both have businesses. And so it's very hard. You know, if you tell somebody, hey, I have a sustainable program, I've even had people tell me, I don't care about sustainability. Some people have said, yes, that's important to me. Most people want quick. You know, they want to see the fastest results possible. And in addition to what you said, but like the 4 week, the 6 week transformation, 21 day transformation. Yes, a lot of those pictures are absolutely, it's the lighting, what they're wearing, it slumps over, all that can make you look, you know, you could do the pictures in the same day and look like you lost 10 pounds, depending on how you're standing, lighting, all that stuff. But also, you know, if you actually do lose, you know, in 4 weeks, 10 to 15 pounds, and you lose, you know, 4 or 5% body fat in that time period, the way that you get there is not going to be sustainable for you, you know, for 3 months, 6 months, 12 months. You cannot do those things. You cannot eat in that type of deficit consistently to get those types of results. So a lot of times what you don't see is if you do have a 4 or 6 week transformation, yeah, that person might get awesome results, but a month later, they're back to where they're at because after those pictures, they're like, oh my gosh, I'm super hungry. I can't sustain this, whatever this training program and, you know, whatever it's 4 or 5 days of cardio and five to six days of training. And they go back to the way they were versus someone who takes their time, actually takes a little bit longer, 3, 6 months, 9 months, and does it the right way and is able to actually sustain the results they've gotten. So yes, there's definitely the pictures that are toyed with and the lighting, but also in addition to that, the methods are just not going to be sustainable. And if they're not, why even do it in the first place? Because if it's just for a good before after picture, there's not a lot of value in that besides for the business owner and marketing. And for the actual person doing it, they're probably a month later just back to the way they were because, again, they're on some extreme deficit. They're so hungry. And now they have to pull back because they can't sustain that. So that would be something else.
I always wish that they would show you like, here's a 6-week transformation, but here's 6 weeks after that and 6 weeks after that and 6 weeks after that. Right. Like I wish people would show that. But once again, nobody likes those pictures and nobody shares those because either they drop off or they just like figure like I did it. So everyone knows that I did it, but like, we're not going to go back there. Or like, I mean, and especially people who are selling these programs. I mean, occasionally you will see, like, I know like Mark Carroll will do that. He'll be like, this girl has been doing my programs for like, you know, 36 months and will show like some progression of the sort, but you don't see the builds in between, right? You don't always see all the filler and things like that, but I would love for you to respond to this. So, you know, every now and again, I know we'll get a client who's like, I'm willing to put the work in and it doesn't matter how extreme it is because I will keep it off. This time I will maintain it. Like I have committed to doing this. So like, let's hear the answer to that statement, because I know we get that a lot, right? Like, I know I haven't done it before, but I'm fully willing to like do all that it takes to like maintain this result.
So are you talking about you get inquiries where people are like, I don't care how extreme it is, just give it to me, because that's a tough one. So I do think there are times in terms of aggressive fat loss where you can go through a very short period of it before you pull back and go to something more sustainable, but I'm talking just maybe a few weeks. That's only going to be right for a very certain type of individual. Somebody who's got a good relationship with food, they probably already have a decent amount of experience with like maybe tracking their macros or weight training. And most of the people that would ask that are not the people that have the experience. In my experience, because I have had people ask that same question. So to get somebody like that to pull back, I mean, it's hard to use logic with some of these people, but just to explain that to them, look, here's how we could do it. Cause as professionals, we all know, I know how to get somebody to lose weight quickly. Okay. So first off, yes, you want to have a pretty aggressive calorie deficit. In addition to that, you want to lose weight quickly. I'm not talking about body fat, just weight. Let's lower your carbs. Okay. So you're going to drop a ton of water weight. You're going to drop, glycogen or stored carb weight as well. The downside of that is you're not going to have any energy because of the calories. And you're definitely not going to have any energy for workouts because your carbs are really low. And you probably won't be able to train. But you'll lose, a lot of weight quickly. What's going to be better for you is a more moderate deficit. You don't need to go low. You can go low carb. But if you're weight training, for most people, I'd actually recommend at least going moderate carb and maybe, lowering dietary fat, because then your workouts, strength training workouts, tend to be a little bit better because you have more energy for them. And getting someone to understand that if you just take it a little bit slower, then it's probably going to work better. And it's hard as a professional to find that line between enough weight loss and enough fat loss to keep them motivated and see that they're progressing, but not so aggressive that they are super hungry, where they're hitting like the aggressive deficit you gave them for 4 or 5 days and then just overeating on the other 2 days. That middle ground has to be there enough to keep them motivated, but not so much that they're dropping muscle and just losing weight so quickly and constantly hungry,
Yeah, no, for sure. So it's like when you talk about like realistic physique goals, like let's just like establish some timelines or even just like some like ideas of like what is realistic for people. Like, what would you say if someone's like, what's realistic for me? Like, what should I be? I mean, do people even ask that question? Probably not.
Not enough.
They're like, actually, can I have an unrealistic physique goal? That's probably what most people.
Yeah. So realistic. Oh my gosh. As you guys probably know, there are so many variables. Right. So for me, most of the clients I get don't have a ton of weight that they want to lose, maybe 5 to 25 pounds on the scale. Although, of course, I try to get people maybe a little bit less scale focused. But for that person, I think it's reasonable to, in terms of like actual body weight, if you're going into a fat loss phase, to lose like 0.5 to 1% of your body weight per week, which is sustainable. But again, it really depends on the person. If you have somebody who wants to lose, who's like really, really overweight, 50 to 70 pounds, they can lose more weight quickly than someone who has less weight to lose. So it does depend on what your total weight loss goals are, right? Assuming your goal is weight loss or fat loss. In terms of like, if you have other goals like muscle gain, that's going to take a bit longer for sure. It's easier to lose fat than it is to gain muscle. Muscle takes a lot of work. Certainly that depends on your genetics. For me, I have an easier time dropping body fat. Like I can, it's fine. I can just lower my calories a little bit and like my body will shed fat. Gaining muscle for me is like so much harder genetically, even when I'm eating more calories, right? So, and I would say for the average person, that's also true. So to gain muscle, I mean, in a month, if you gain a pound of muscle in a month, that's pretty awesome. And again, it's also going to depend on your experience. If you've been training forever, you know, gaining 4 to 5 pounds of muscle over the course of like 9 to 12 months is pretty awesome. If you're just starting out, certainly you can gain muscle a little bit faster. So there are those variables. I know that wasn't like a super clear answer, but it really depends on your training age, your training experience, how much weight you have to lose. That's all going to matter. Understanding that the longer you've been training, the more experience you have, the harder it's going to be to gain that muscle. And then obviously the more weight you have to lose total, the easier it is going to be to lose fat quickly.
Yeah, that's really, it is a hard question to answer for clients about what kind of transformation is realistic. Again, because the variables you mentioned along with like their own personal timeline, like how long, you know, what is their expectation for said results as well, right? And I think separates the three of us maybe from a lot of people in the industry is we do have that quality of life transformation in mind too. Like that it, you know, it's a lot of people aren't just looking for fat loss, but they're looking to become like kind of shift their identity a little bit to be being a person like, I want to get strong or I want to become fit or I want to, you know, those types of things, which I think is really like the more that transformation happens, the more I think the average client is flexible with how long it takes, right? When you feel like you're just kind of on that path, right?
Oh my gosh. I love that you said that. Absolutely. That's another reason why a lot of the transformations that you see that are short are not going to be the best, because whatever you're doing to making that transformation cannot be a lifestyle. No one's going to live an extreme aggressive deficit type of lifestyle, right? So absolutely. Making sure that you can integrate habits. So important. Not just, you know, it's not all about just progressive overload and calorie deficit. Like I integrate a lot of things like, you know, how's your sleep? A lot of people don't focus on how much they're sleeping, which impacts everything in your life. Water intake, fruit and vegetables, these really simple things. Protein intake also. 80 to 90% of the women that I start training just don't get enough protein. And they don't correlate it with fat loss enough. It's mostly correlated with, you know, building muscle and big bulky guys need protein. Well, protein has a lot of other fat loss benefits. So integrating these types of habits where eventually they become automatic, right? Like, I know I use a lot of precision nutrition stuff, like a palm sized serving of protein at every meal, or, you know, 1 to 2 palm sized servings of protein at every meal. If you can like slowly start to get that down, that can be more impactful on your lifestyle than, you know, just hitting macros or strength training. So eventually, like you said, you become the person that just does those things automatically and it becomes your lifestyle. Once it becomes your lifestyle, then it's your identity. And that's ideally where you want to get to. I love that you touched on that, the lifestyle benefits and making sure it's sustainable and it fits into everything else in your life that you want to do. Because training should be part of your life. It shouldn't be everything, right? It shouldn't be taking over your life to do the things that you need to do to be the best version of yourself.
Well, totally. And I also love how you said that, because it's also when the focus isn't on sustainability or how the process feels, then that means that we're actually ignoring how we feel or overriding what is like normal or sustainable. And you know, one part of that whole transformation too, and building your own personal confidence, is caring about how you feel. I mean, we've said this a lot of times, but a lot of women, we feel like, are, you know, ourselves included, don't really understand their personalities until they've actually eaten enough consistently for long enough to notice the difference. Like you can, if you can say, oh, I don't mind, I can cut to 12, 1300 calories. I'm fine. I'm good at that. Like that's actually more of a concern than not, right? Like you should be able to notice if you're in a 400 or 500 calorie deficit. Like it should stand out. The contrast should be there. Or we've, you know, again, we've sort of normalized low calorie eating and normalized a lot of the symptoms that come along with that. That's just sort of how women, a lot of women are just used to feeling, and being able to change that also in the course of coaching. I mean, that's one of the first steps Natalie and I made in like self-awareness was actually tracking how much you're eating, how much you're sleeping, and like caring about these things that actually don't just contribute to like your lifestyle. They largely determine it. If you're chronically fatigued from not getting enough sleep, that's going to have a real impact on how your life feels, which is sort of at the heart of all of it, isn't it?
100%. Just to kind of, you know, add to what you said there in terms of like the calories, a lot of women do think that they need to eat less, but when a lot of women start my program, I'm sure you guys experience this too, I'm telling them to eat more based on what I see that they're eating. And that's very hard for a lot of women to do because it doesn't make any sense if they're having trouble losing fat to eat more food. And it's not always eating less, it's eating the right amount. And like you said, the people who have, you know, I had a woman join my program last week who was doing Optavia. I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with this. So I didn't bash Optavia or anything to her. I just told her, you know, she's probably gonna have to eat more. I need to see what she's eating. And the first week she's eating, you know, 600, 700, 800 calories per day. She's a 150 pound woman. And so like the first order of business is just getting her slow, if you know it slowly, to get her to eat more food, because eating that much food, I mean, she's not going to be able to strength train. She's got to be constantly hungry. She may not be feeling it yet. But there's just no way that she's going to be able to do this for more than, a few weeks, a month tops at this level of calories. So just getting her to understand actually eating more, the right amount is going to benefit you. Sometimes it's less. For sure. Some people do need to eat, you know, less calories, but a lot of people actually need to eat more than what they're eating now to actually see the progress that they want. And that's a really hard thing to understand. It just seems counterintuitive. If I eat more, I'm just going to get bigger and fatter. No, not necessarily. You got to support, you know, you're eating below your basal metabolic rate.
And then some of the things we kind of run into too is that we do have like also a group of women who have elevated their calories, right? And have gotten to a place that maintenance is like actually a place that they really enjoy. And that even sometimes a little bit of a surplus sometimes with their training. And then when it comes time to be in a fat loss phase, they're like, I can't eat that little. So I really feel like I should be able to like lose weight at like, you know, 10% or 5% of my calories because I'm so used to like fueling and feeling good. And then we have to be like, no, there still is. Like you still have, so then there's a group of women who are like, no, you actually need to actually eat less. Like, I really, really wish you could be at, you know, 2000 calories or 2200 calories and eat 1900 and like see a successful fat loss phase. But like, we really need to get into a deficit. Right. And then we have this group of women who are like, I can't do it, but I really, 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 really want fat loss, but like, I'm unwilling to like go this low. Right. And so it's a pendulum swing that like can really bite us in the butt sometimes, because even for myself and Heidi, it's like, in order for me to have a successful fat loss phase at this point, I probably have to go into the 13s. I'm no longer are the days where like 15s would work for me, like from just historically and like what I've tracked. And it's like, that's really gross. Like that's like nothing. Right. But there is a point where like, it does cost a lot more to have, especially if you don't have a whole lot to lose, you have to pay for it in a weird way. Right. And so it is hard because once you do get used to eating at maintenance or even a little bit above, you're like, oh man, this is like really amazing. Like, I don't want to leave this place. But then when we want fat loss, it's like if you don't get anything at like, you know, 16s or 15s, then you have to like address the possibility that you might actually have to eat less to get what, you know, air quote, you want. And so like, what's realistic, like a really realistic physique goal comes with a realistic timelines and realistic effort and the reality of what you would have to sacrifice in order to have this too, right?
Totally. And just like you can't compare other things, you can't compare calorie, you know, deficit percentages, because everybody's going to respond differently. If there was anything that there's a lot of areas in this world where, yeah, you wish things were fair. More fair. And I'm not even saying this is near the top of the list, but it is definitely on the list. Right. It's not fair.
Yeah. Or even just a previous, like my old deficit numbers don't work anymore. And I've done them for, you know, I'd been adherent for like 8 weeks and you're like, so we need to drop them maybe. Yeah. Right. And it's just, be really ugly.
Yeah. One person gets results at 20% calorie deficit. Another person doesn't get some at 35, you know, it's not fair.
it's not fair. And there's so much variability between people, and you're totally right. You know, what you were saying, Natalie, about the, you know, 200, 300 calorie deficit for most people, that's not going to cause them to see much of a difference. And you do need to probably lower your calories a little bit more than that. You know, a surplus of 200 to 300 is fine. It's like, you know, you can gain muscle slowly and like minimize fat gain, but to lose fat, you're probably going to be better off lowering your calories a little bit more, because if you don't see any progress, you're going to get, you know, upset, and you probably are not going to see, you might not see any progress. And if you do see progress, it's going to be excruciatingly slow. And if that's the case, you're just going to be dieting for longer. So you need to find that middle ground where you minimize how long you're in the dieting phase, but it's also enough to see fat loss. And that is different for every person. Like you said, you can see people with the same body weight training the same. One person might be able to lose weight on 1800 calories and another person is 1400. And you're like, what the heck? Susie weighs, you know, 148. And she's, well, sorry, like I don't have a good explanation. Maybe you're shorter. Certainly women who are shorter are at a disadvantage because their metabolism tends to be lower. But you can't take someone else's numbers and just, you know, say, well, hey, that worked for them. And, you know, it should work for me. Really, there's so much variability between individuals in terms of, you know, what calories are going to work for you.
And even like, especially on Instagram, like you have a lot of women who exceed the math on Instagram too, which also does the realistic goals also a disservice, right? Because yeah, sometimes you'll see a girl who's like 5'2", even in her 40s, like eating like 2,600 calories. And you're like, technically the math would not lend that way, but yet here we are.
100%. Anytime you estimate a deficit or surplus, it is only an estimate. That is it. You know, you can't take those numbers to heart until you have whatever 14 days of, you know, data where you have your calories tracked and your body weight, and you can see what's happening. Then you have a better idea of what to do. But yeah, like you said, there are anomalies too, like where you see somebody 5'2" and 2,600 calories and, you know, whatever, either that's their maintenance or they can even lose weight at that number. And it just may not make sense to you physiologically, but it happens. I can think of two clients I have right now, almost the same body weight. One is dropping at 1700 to 1900 calories. One is not dropping. And she's at like 1400 to 1500 calories. I don't have a good explanation for that. I can tell you the person who's not dropping at fewer calories is not happy with that. But, you know, at the same time, it's like, I mean, you know, there's certainly things that could be going on. Is she like actually tracking her calories right? You know, is she actually weighing her food to the point if it's not working, that'd be a good thing to do. But that's a good example. And this other person is like, I'm not hungry and I feel great and I'm dropping fat and my pants are fitting. I wish I had a great explanation for why that happens. But as you know, sometimes there's just other people are lucky.
Kind of, right? Yeah. I mean, we hate to even call it that, but it's kind of the truth. I mean, genetically, you know, we obviously know the genetics play a huge part in your results and like efficient, non-efficient metabolisms. And I think, you know, as Heidi and I dive in the rabbit hole, like epigenetics, like some people really just literally have bodies where like, no, we've actually like lived, you know, your ancestors lived through a famine. They're really good at keeping body fat on. And like, sure, you might not like that for yourself, but at the same time, it's like, this is just them's the breaks.
Right. And it's also partly why you're here. So, you know.
Yeah. And you know, if we have a famine again, you were set up very well. That's an advantage.
100%. Right. And I think it's from an evolutionary standpoint. Nobody likes that for fat loss. Nobody likes that reason. Like it definitely isn't a sexy sell on Instagram. Like, but just think. You'll be fine. Yeah. Like
when the zombie apocalypse comes.
Those with super low body fat and abs are probably not going to make it through a zombie apocalypse, but you will. And like nobody, that is me. I am there the person who will make it through the zombie apocalypse. Sorry, guys.
There you go. There you go. Everyone's different.
right? It's all about what you value, right? What's realistic for you at the time?
100%.
Let's talk a little bit about training changes at the age, because you always hear, especially for the three of us who are in our 40s, like, oh, after 40s, like it's impossible to lose weight. And you really shouldn't, you should do more and more cardio, because as you get heavier, cardio is just the way. I mean, even though we're like, no, strength training is the way, because we all need to be able to like age gracefully into a really, really wonderful place where we're not, you know, debilitated or having surgeries or knee replacements at like 40 or, you know, things like that. But thoughts on how training changes as you age.
So I do think the basic format of training should stay the same in terms of like, yes, strength training should be prioritized if physique change is your goal. I'm a big fan of like the 3 to 12 rep range in general, because it's a great range to build strength, but also muscle. It doesn't mean that you can't like max out and go lower. But the benefits of maxing out beyond just knowing like what your max is on a lift.
You mean your ego besides your ego for a 1 rep max?
Yeah, exactly. And you can certainly go above 12. There's nothing wrong with doing like, you know, in the 12 to 20 rep range. But in general, it's going to be harder to utilize progressive overload the more reps you're doing, because it just gets really, really hard, uncomfortable. It burns. You can still do it. Again, nothing wrong with it. That's why I like 3 to 12 reps. The big changes, and I've seen this with clients I train and myself, might be exercise selection, though. To give you an example, and you guys have probably seen this as well. It depends on the person. Some people are just a little bit more prone to injury than others. There are certain lifts that, you know, even if your form is awesome, you may just not be able to utilize progressive overload on certain exercises because they may not be right for your body. I found that with myself. So let me give you a few examples. Barbell squats. I can still barbell squat. Can I barbell squat heavy without pain the next day? No. Why? I don't know. It's just something as I've gotten older, I've had to move away from. Can I still use progressive overload and train my quads and glutes? Absolutely. So now I focus a little bit more on like Bulgarian split squats, for example, reverse lunges. You know,
nobody wants to hear this, Kurt. Nobody wants to hear that the option, like moving away from a barbell back squat is a Bulgarian split squat. That is a super hard sell.
It's so true. It's so true, because I will say Bulgarian split squats are just generally more brutal. Like to do that, it just kind of suck, right? I would rather probably do a barbell back squat. And I'm not saying everybody has to do
that. Every time.
Like I would rather injure myself doing a barbell back squat.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or even a front rack squat at this point, than a Bulgarian split squats are the worst. Sorry, I just had to
No, it's so true. It's absolutely, I mean, and again, I'm not saying everybody should do this. I'm using myself as a case study.
It is a good example.
Someone else might be able to barbell back squat their entire life and lift heavy. Certainly, right? It really depends on the person. But I do think in general, the lumbar spine as you get older, like if you're lifting really, really heavy with barbell deadlifts, barbell squats, they can become problematic for a lot of people. I've seen that with myself, like I said, and some of my own clients. So the key for me is, you know, work the same muscle groups, maybe without putting as much stress on the back. And it all depends on how strong you are. If you take somebody who's just maybe hasn't been training that much and is not that strong, they'll probably be okay because they're starting out with 8 to 10 reps with just the bar and it's 45 pounds, much less likely to injure yourself. You've been training for years and years and years and years, and you've built up to, you know, for guys, a 300 or 400 pound back squat. For women, maybe a little bit less than that. Obviously, you're more likely to get injured the stronger you are. So that's something to keep in mind. If you're just starting out, probably any exercise is going to work well for you because you're just not lifting that heavy. Same thing with deadlifts. I just found that like barbell deadlifts from the ground started to not work well for me because I got really not like super strong, but you know, I was doing over 400 pounds for reps, and that was enough that my legs could handle it. My spine was like, no, thank you. So now I do different variations. Maybe a trap bar works better for you. Maybe the trap bar with higher handles. I do a lot more like single leg variations of those movements. So you just have to be careful and make sure that what you're doing allows you to consistently train. Because if you're in pain or you have, you know, a minor injury and you can't train, well, you know, nothing else matters if you're, you know, having to sit out and constantly vary your training. So the key is, find variations that work for you that allow you to train consistently year round and still utilize the principles of getting stronger, you know, gaining muscle. And that's going to be different for everyone. And I think as you get older, for sure. it's more likely that you might need to make those adjustments. I mean, when I was in my 20s and 30s, nothing bothered me. It was deadlift squats, everything as heavy as I could go. And now I've seen that shift into, okay, what can I do that is just not going to hurt me and still allow me to get stronger? I don't know if you guys have seen some of the same things.
Yeah, I actually really love that you're saying that. And I feel like it's in a weird way, really like oddly validating, because I think, you know, kind of with our, even the beginning piece of like realistic physicals, it's also like realistic training too. Like it's so easy, I think, for people to judge themselves from like prior versions of themselves. Like, wow, man, I used to deadlift like 300 pounds when I was, you know, 30 some years old. And now that I'm 40, I can't even like, you know, I'm 60 pounds less than that or whatever. And it's like, yeah, as you get older and as you age, you might not have the same amount of capacity that you did before. And you shouldn't get upset. Like, you shouldn't beat yourself up for it. Like, it might just not be realistic for you to deadlift to that extent anymore or back squat to that extent anymore. So I feel a lot of compassion and grace in your words, because if I can never meet my, you know, previous deadlift PRs, it's also probably okay, especially if it was at a phase in my life when I was, you know, slightly younger, or, you know, the demands are not the same on our bodies and
for the amount of time you have to train.
For the amount of time to train too.
Yeah.
Totally.
Well, and I love too that, like, you know, that the subtext of this whole like point of discussion is that, like, of course we all want to continue to train, which is like the, you know, one of the best anti-aging things that you can do. Like, in case anybody listening has not gotten this message, your metabolism doesn't magically like drop off after 40, that primarily the reason your metabolism goes down as you age is because you lose muscle mass at an exponential rate as you age. So continuing to resistance train at whatever, you know, in whatever movements feel best to you. I love that was your response, not, like that, of course there are movements that you will be able to do. It's like, pay attention to how you feel, care about how you feel. If you notice the next day you feel freaking broken, like maybe we switch up the stimulus in ways that allow you to recover more fully and to continue to train. Because again, as we age, these pushing, pulling, squatting, lifting, reaching, like those are the movements where aging people tend to hurt themselves. And so those are also the places, and those are the movements that functional, you know, these compound movements,
quality of life,
support.
Quality of life.
Yeah. Sorry. There's a babbling point all the way around to, yes, we want to continue to train, care about how you feel, adjust as needed, so that you can maintain a quality of life in multiple ways.
100%. And to be clear, some people may not have to make any adjustments. I mean, again, if you're just lucky and, you know, deadlifting, squatting, no matter how heavy you go, just doesn't bother you, that can happen too. Really, I mean, again, it's just your makeup. So again, the best piece of advice I can give you is train in a way that just allows you to keep training, so that you're not missing sessions because, oh, you know, I tweaked my back or tweaked my shoulder. For me, it took a long time. I was very like much set in my ways. But I, you know, I realized it's like if I do a certain movement and it's bugged me the last 10 times I've done it, then maybe I can just shift into doing something else for the same muscle group, as opposed to just force feeding, you know, this movement into my program because I've done it for the last 15 years, you know? So do what works for you.
Yeah. And it's like, the movement even still has to be valuable to you too, right? It's like, there are even things like now, you know, in my like fifth, sixth year of CrossFit that I'm like, you know what? This move I'm almost guaranteed to hurt myself if I'm not paying attention. So I just always go with a lower weight from like overhead squats. There's really no, you know, super benefit to that movement anyways. It's more of just like, it's like an ego move, right? But at the same time, so it's like, I know that like, you know, it feels good about 45, 55 pounds and that's about it. And so I don't actually really have the desire to go heavier because I know that the risk of injury for myself and my mobility won't maybe allow for it, or even just my form. And so it's like, while I'm not saying I never will try it heavier, it's like also okay that I don't, right? And so I think sometimes we just need to check ourselves a little bit as we strength train, because most of us that strength train are actually stronger than the general population, right?
Yeah.
So there is a point where like, it is cool for your ego to have a 300 pound deadlift as a woman, but at the same time, you don't necessarily have to have one, right?
Yeah.
Like you can still live a really good quality of life with that one. And I just really appreciate what you said, because her move is the back squat, mine is a deadlift. And so I feel like, well, I will not be doing Bulgarian split squats in exchange for it. Just kidding. However, I think it is important to just remind ourselves that there are other movements available to you to sustain a quality of life and a realistic quality of life than always having to push yourself to do that movement.
Well, you know, and it's interesting too, as you know, the three of us do coach predominantly women. And I wonder if maybe weirdly, even though a lot of women come to lifting later on and are intimidated or don't have a lot of like these, you know, I wonder if like, when we start, we usually, you know, a lot of these women, ourselves included, start with a coach and start with these like laid out programs. And we're learning a variety of different movements. And I wonder how many, like all of the men that I know, present company excluded, and like, you know, like maybe Jordan or whatever, but basically all the men I know just go in and like kind of do stuff. They don't really like follow a program.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I just wonder if women have a little bit of an advantage at this point, you know, like that we're like most women that I know that lift are very much following a program, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's important. Certainly if you're weight training, like just going in and doing it is cool. Like you don't have to have a program. Just the fact that you're lifting is great, but it's also not nearly as good as having a program. I think you can say that when you have a structured program where it's a certain amount of weeks and like you're repeating workouts over time. It's one of the big hurdles I have to get through with some people is it's like they do week one and they're like, where are my workouts for week two? I'm like, you're repeating week one and just trying to go up in weight or reps. And they're like, oh. Like, you know, you don't actually need that much variety. You want some variety to keep, you know, yourself interested. Like I'll change a program after 6 weeks, but you don't need to change your workouts every week. And that's actually inhibitory to your results because you need to go up in weight and reps over time to see results. And you're constantly doing a new workout. That means you're just starting over and trying to guess with the weight that you're using. So in terms of a program, yes, make sure that you are actually repeating workouts over time. It doesn't have to be for 6 weeks. You can find what works for you. Maybe it's 4 weeks. Sometimes I'll go longer depending on the person. But definitely repeat your workouts and track your workouts just like you would your food so that you know where you improved, what you did last time. Okay, maybe I'll go with 5 pounds here. Or maybe instead of 8 reps, I'm going to try for like 9 or 10 at the same weight this week. Very, very important concept to understand. And the last thing I'll mention in terms of like programming is, and I've probably said this already, but our number one job as coaches is to make sure that our clients are pain-free and injury-free when they're training. Again, because if they are in pain or injured, then they just can't train and none of the programming matters. So that's why it's so important to make those adjustments when necessary.
And same thing goes with like fat loss phases, right? Like our goal as coaches is also to make sure you're not injuring yourself with your calorie range, right? Mm-hmm. And like the extremeness of it, right? Like if there are coaches who are giving you 1,000 calories, like we really need to talk to them, right? It's like our goal is for you to have this experience as pain-free as possible too. And while, yeah, like cutting calories does pinch, we want to also be smart about like what we're doing, right? It's the same thing.
How long we're doing it,
right?
Totally.
And I just had a conversation with a client right now who's, you know, she's wanting to lose a little bit more weight and she's lost about 20 pounds in the program, but she's got a lot of stress in her life right now. She's got like things going on with her family and just some other medical things going on. And I was just like, you need to like the most we need to maintain your weight during this time. Because what you have to understand is a deficit and dieting is a stress to your body. And you have a lot of stress in your life right now. So if we're just adding more stress into your life, you're setting yourself up to fail and potentially just crash. And so it's important to look at just the big picture, right? What things are going on in your life. If you're already really stressed, probably not a good time to like take calories down again. And maintenance is progress. That's what I was preaching to her, is like let's just maintain where you're at. And that is progress right now. And like, let's eat a little bit more food and just focus on maybe those 2 to 3 workouts per week. And in 2 months, like let's reevaluate. But right now I would be doing you a disservice to try to get you to continue to lose fat. And actually like dieting constantly is just also not a good thing physiologically. So she was on board after we talked, but sometimes it's hard.
It's so good to have you like confirm that for her. Cause yeah, Heidi always loves to say it's not an add-on habit. Like we're not taking a full plate and then throwing fat loss on top of it. Like it's just going to topple all down. Right. And I do. I love that we preach that like maintenance is progress. I mean, how many times have you had women dissatisfied with the weight that they're at? And then they put on 10 pounds and they would give anything to go back to that weight that they were dissatisfied with. Right. It's, and it's like, if you don't call it for yourself, that is the eventuality. It's like, you know, how much it's like, oh, I really wish when I look back, like I would have appreciated that because I really like myself there, but I thought I was fat then, right? Or I thought I weighed too much then. And like, we don't want to look in the rear view when we could do something right now about like how we feel, right?
Yeah, totally.
100%. 100%.
Yeah, this was so fun. We really do need to have like three podcasts like we talked about in DMs. Okay, so tell everybody where to find you and like and where you're at and like how to get more Kurt Rollins. And then we'll definitely have to have like another session.
Part deux.
Part deux.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We'd love to chat with both of you again. So mainly social media wise, I'm on Instagram at Kurt Rollins Fitness. I also do post a lot on Facebook under just my name, Kurt Rollins. I have a private Facebook group called Ultimate Fat Loss for Women as well, where I do live videos, live trainings, and provide some other resources. I just go a little bit more depth or a little bit more in depth in that Facebook group than I do on Instagram, where Instagram's a little bit more like shorter form content. I do a little bit more long form stuff in that Facebook group. So you can find that. It's called Ultimate Fat Loss for Women.
Love it.
Awesome. Thanks so much for hanging out with us.
Whew, you made it. The butter dish didn't melt your face.
Thanks so much for hanging with us. If you enjoy that episode, we'd love it if you would subscribe, share it to your social media, or leave a comment. That all really helps, so the kids say. If you want to find us, you can find us on Instagram at Butter Your Macros.
On the web at butteryourmacros.com.
Twitter and TikTok at What's Up Butters. And we'll see you guys on the next episode.
Thanks.